Chapter 12, a chapter in which frightful things happen. There are difficult mountain roads all over the world, but most of them are made for motor traffic. The road at the Inn of the Two Little Silver Dishes, however, had never seen an automobile before. Two deep ruts of the gauge of Chinese carts led through the boulder-strewn riverbed. If good fortune could have driven fast, he might have fared better, for the tires sank in the gravel and stones flew up to left and right, but the truck did not move forward. Good fortune had foreseen such emergencies and had taken four strong planks, two shovels, and a pickaxe with him. These were now unloaded, and Big Tiger and Christian helped to shovel the gravel aside while Good Fortune pushed the planks under the wheels. "This truck is no good," said Greencoat, who was looking on, twiddling his thumbs and spitting occasionally to show his displeasure. "It's a good car," reported Good Fortune, "but the road is bad. Call the innkeeper. Now, boys, when I start up, you must push behind to get the wheels up on the planks." "Here I am," cried the innkeeper. "At a time like this, it would be a crime to leave my guests to fend for themselves. No man is lost who has friends, and the strength of the insignificant keeps the world going." "Hold your tongue and push behind," cried Good Fortune, who was already at the steering wheel. "One, two, three, push! Lay, lay, lay! Come, come, come!" He started up, the tires gripped the planks, and the truck began to move. The planks had to be carried forward a few times, and then the riverbed ended, and the steep mountain road began. Fortunately, it was fairly wide, and the abyss was right up to the edge at only a few places. "I shall go on ahead, if I may," said the innkeeper. "Go on," said Good Fortune. "You know this place well, old Redbeard." "Mr. Good Fortune likes his little joke. I like to use my pistol if things go wrong." "Good heavens," cried the innkeeper, alarmed. "Nothing will go wrong, and nothing will go crooked. I wish you a safe journey." He hurried on ahead and stopped when he got to the first turn of the road. Christian and Big Tiger came up behind. Each of them was carrying a heavy wooden skid shoe, which Good Fortune had instructed them to push under the rear wheels if the truck should roll backward. "A bit to the southwest," shouted the innkeeper. "A little more, please. That's right. Stop. Not that way. The rocks won't make way for us. Reverse a bit, and then turn eastward." "Say right or left," shouted Good Fortune. "Please don't be angry with me, sir. I don't understand right and left." "Then signal with your hands instead." "I can't signal with my hands," asserted the innkeeper, "because there may be people around here who might think I was signaling them." "I trust there are no such people," said Good Fortune menacingly. "Oh, woe, woe," lamented the innkeeper. "It can't be helped. Perhaps one of the young gentlemen could go on ahead. There's a herd boy up there by the little temple minding my sheep. The young rascal must be told not to stir from there, otherwise he might think... You know, sir, there's no accounting for what these lads can think." "Perhaps he might think you're still the old scoundrel you used to be," said Good Fortune. "Get going, Big Tiger. Run up to him at once." "May Compass Mountain come with me?" asked Big Tiger. "Must you two always stick together?" "Very well, you may both go. Greencoat will take the brake shoes. Off with you now." The two ran on in front. The road led in four turns up to the waterfall. When they reached the top, they looked down into the treeless valley, at each side of which stood ranges of hills, their deep rifts looking like the folds of a garment. When they saw the little temple up on the slope, they began to run. A big boy was standing up on the top step, leaning against one of the wooden pillars which supported the projecting roof. He wore leather breeches and an open sheepskin smock. Under the smock he was naked, and one could see he was a strong boy and somewhat older than Big Tiger and Christian. He held a hefty stick in one hand. With the other he shaded his eyes. He had a short, shiny black pigtail. The boy was looking neither at Big Tiger nor at Christian. He was gazing down the deep gorge to where the truck was still standing before the first turn of the road. 20 paces ahead, just where the road circled round, the innkeeper was standing open-mouthed, looking up. Greencoat was not to be seen. "Hello!" shouted Christian as loud as he could. "Here we are!" cried Big Tiger. At that moment the engine began to hum. They could hear the innkeeper shouting, and some stones tumbled down into the valley. "What are you shouting for?" asked the shepherd boy roughly. "We've come to tell you you're not to stir from here," said Big Tiger. The shepherd boy looked contemptuously at Big Tiger. "Are you the provincial bailiff?" he asked. "Get out of my way. You're between me and the view." He pushed Big Tiger aside and made as if to knock him down, all the time keeping his gaze fixed on the road below, where the innkeeper was guiding the truck with gestures, now to the left, now to the right, and then to the left again, urging it forward and then bringing it to a halt. "You needn't trouble about the truck," said Big Tiger. The boy did not cease from watching. He only grinned and gripped his cudgel more firmly. Suddenly he started. "The sign!" he cried. "The sign!" He turned round like lightning, tore off his smock, and gave Big Tiger, who tried to bar his way, a push in the chest, flinging him backward into the dark recess where his head struck against the altar of the temple. Then he sprang down the steps to where Christian was standing. With a lightning swing of his cudgel, he dealt Christian a powerful blow, but the same instant he himself lay stretched, full length, face downward on the terracotta tiles, for Christian had deftly put out a foot and tripped him. The cudgel fell from his hand. Christian pushed it aside and flung himself on the boy, who hit out with hands and feet, scratched like a cat, and even tried to bite. He writhed desperately in an effort to get Christian down, but Christian knelt on his shoulders, twisted his pigtail round his hand, and pressed his face down on the tiles. The boy panted with rage. He was hurt by the fall. His knee was barked and bleeding, and his veins were nearly bursting from the pressure. With a desperate effort, he freed himself, and leaping up, flung Christian off in such a way that he fell head over heels backwards. "I mustn't let go," thought Christian desperately, but it was of no avail. The big boy now had his hands free, and he started right away to bash the prostrate Christian in the face. Christian had to let go of the pigtail in order to defend himself, but already the other was on top of him, scratching him in savage triumph with his fingernails. Christian yelled. Suddenly, a dark shadow flitted over the wrestling pair. Something swished through the air, and the herd boy's cudgel came bang down on his own head. Now he, too, was down. Big Tiger stood over him, panting, while Christian struggled to his feet. All three were in a bad way, covered with bleeding cuts, scratches, and bites. Even handfuls of hair were torn out. Big Tiger had a great weal across his forehead. "Have you killed him altogether?" asked Christian anxiously. "I'm not quite sure. There seems to be a bit of life in him still. Then let's tie his feet at once. If we don't, he'll jump up and get at the gadget and turn on the flood water. Have you got a piece of string?" "No, the kite took it all." "Look, he's got a leather belt on," cried Big Tiger. "That would be unfair," said Christian. "What does unfair mean?" asked Big Tiger. "Anything you really shouldn't do is unfair," said Christian. "But we have to do it," Big Tiger decided. "If we don't, he'll kill us both with his cudgel. He's stronger than the two of us together, and as wild as 10 wolves. Without waiting to hear further objections, Big Tiger bent over the boy and took off his leather belt. Christian dropped his scruples, and together they bound the feet of their savage adversary. They had scarcely finished when the boy came to himself. He looked around him wildly and at once tried to jump up, but Big Tiger and Christian flung themselves on him and held him down. Then they each sat on an arm of their conquered enemy. "You're cowards 10 times over, screamed the boy. "Let me up till I stamp you to a pulp." "We'll take mighty good care never to let you free again," said Christian. "We'd be very sorry to have to kill you," Big Tiger assured him. "You'd best remain lying there. You'll save us a lot of trouble." "You talk a lot of high-sounding words instead of being ashamed of yourselves," said the boy. "I won't speak to you any more." And he shut his eyes to show he did not consider them even worth looking at. Big Tiger said, "You'll soon talk again when the innkeeper comes and asks why you disobeyed his orders, and Greencoat will be very angry with you, too. Perhaps you know him." "What's that you're saying?" cried the boy, opening his eyes instantly. "Is Greencoat here?" "Yes, he's very near," Christian asserted. "And he's in a very nasty temper," Big Tiger remarked. "That's all the same to me," cried the boy. "There are worse things than that. Let me go." "It can't be done," said Big Tiger. The shepherd boy now began to plead. "I'll be peaceful if you let me go. I have to get away. I have something important to do." "We know what you want to do," said Big Tiger. "You want to flood the road," said Christian. "No, I don't," cried the boy, who was nearly crying. "I have to go somewhere. Let me go if you want to remain free of guilt." "You will have to tell us what you want to do," Big Tiger stipulated. I could never do that, said the boy, beginning to cry. I'm lost, and Bator's father is lost, too, he wailed. Who's Bator? Asked Big Tiger. Bator is my friend. And who are you? Asked Christian. I'm Lo Chang, but what's the good of telling you it's no use, and Greencoat the... Scoundrel, you mean? I didn't mean to say even half a word. Well, I'll tell you what we think of Greencoat, Christian declared. This is Big Tiger, and I'm Compass Mountain. We both consider Greencoat a downright villain. It's true he's traveling with us, but that's because the soldier Good Fortune took him for a lift. But he's nothing to us. We despise him. Are you traveling by the horseless car? Yes, we're traveling in that car. And Greencoat? Asked Lo Chang, terrified. Is he traveling with you? Yes, we've told you he is, said Christian. Lo Chang began to sob again. I knew it, he cried despairingly. We're all lost. Christian exchanged a look with Big Tiger, and then he said, We'll let you free if you promise to leave us in peace. Promise it by your face, added Big Tiger. I promise it by my face, said Lo Chang. They untied his feet and gave him back his belt, and Lo Chang, who just a moment before had been so wild and savage, sat meekly on the floor, weeping. "'Does your head hurt?' asked Big Tiger. "'That's not what's troubling me,' said Lo Chang, drying his eyes. "'It's not on account of myself. "'It's on account of Bator's father and his face and the camels "'and a whole lot of things you wouldn't understand.' "'Perhaps we'd understand if you'd tell us,' ventured Big Tiger. "'Speak,' urged Christian. "'Tell us while there's time,' pleaded Big Tiger. "'I'm from White Stone,' began Lo Chang. "'That's where we're to spend the night,' cried Christian.' "'I thought so,' said Lo Chang, "'as Greencoat is here. "'He always stops the night at White Stone, "'because he wants to take the camels from Bator's father.' "'Can he do that?' asked Christian. "'Up to the present he hasn't been able to, "'because I've always warned Bator's father in time, "'and he's driven the camels away. "'But today Greencoat is traveling by the horseless car, "'and no horse could gallop quickly enough "'to get to White Stone before him.' Bator's father is named Surat, but everyone calls him Dogalon because he's lame. Go on, tell us quickly. Don't you hear how near they are? Big Tiger urged. They're at the third bend of the road, said Lo Chang, unmoved, and it can't be helped. We could warn Dogalon, Christian suggested. You? Asked Lo Chang, and the old scornful look came back. But suddenly he changed his mind and said quickly, If that's so, I'll tell you. It was 2 years ago at this season. Greencoat arrived at White Stone with a caravan of 300 camels from Xinjiang, laden with cotton. On the way through the desert, he had lost some camels. He went to Dogalon. Sell me 10 camels, he said. I'm going over the pass down to Kalgan, and I can't do it without spreading the loads over more camels. Will you accept 60 bots? Dogalon had never before made such a good deal, and he sold his 10 best camels at 60 bots apiece. He still had 12 camels left. The next day, Greencoat went on and camped at Lake Town. The day after that, he was to cross the pass when the caravan would be rested. But a snowstorm came in the night, and half of Greencoat's camels died of cold because they were weakened from the journey and hadn't enough felt covers. When Greencoat reached Kalgan, he went straight to the Yaman and lodged a complaint against Dogalon for having sold him 10 bad camels, saying that otherwise they wouldn't have died of cold. But Dogalon viewed all the dead camels at Lake Town, and not one of his was among them. But the Amban, the note tells us that an Amban is a district magistrate, but the Amban in Kalgan was unjust. He sent armed men. They're coming, cried Christian, jumping up. It can't be helped, said Lo Chang. All three looked down to the road, where the truck was rounding the last bend. The innkeeper was running ahead, beaming with pleasure, hopping from one foot to the other, and waving his arms. When he caught sight of Christian and Big Tiger, he called out, We have overcome the insurmountable! The abyss yawned, the boulders rolled down on us, but we kept bravely pressing on. And now, behold, we're up! Nothing can stop the wheels any more. Lo Chang stood by, as if waiting for a word from the innkeeper. But the latter only shrugged his shoulders and, No lamb this time, was all he said. Then Lo Chang went up to the temple to fetch his sheepskin jacket. I hope he made no difficulties for the young gentleman, inquired the innkeeper. Not the least, said Big Tiger. We had a most interesting talk with him, Christian asserted. There's nothing in the world better than a good talk, declared the innkeeper. Isn't that so? He continued, turning to Good Fortune, who had stopped the truck at the temple steps and got out. Be off, growled Greencoat, who had come up panting behind the truck and flung down the brake shoes. Have you been fighting? Asked Good Fortune, seeing Christian's scratched face. I've been clumsy and fallen, said Christian. And you've bashed yourself against a rock, it seems? It was not rock, it was wood, honored sir, Big Tiger replied. Good Fortune laughed and was going to say something about the perils of mountain climbing, but at that moment the innkeeper called up from the road, Must I then part from your excellencies and the young princes in this unceremonious fashion? I regret you will not avail yourselves any longer of the hospitality of my poor hut, but do please honor me another time. Yes, certainly another time, old Redbeard, Good Fortune called back. A thousand thanks, cried Christian and Big Tiger. Greencoat said nothing. He did not even look around. The innkeeper walked down the road, looking back again and again, and even after he was lost to view, his voice still resounded from the valley, calling, May you have many lucky days! Good Fortune thrust a stick into the tank to see how much gasoline was left. We shall have to fill up at Chiang Bai, he said, and we must hurry, otherwise darkness will overtake us. There's a bit of a moon, remarked Christian. It doesn't shine for long, and it won't give any light at all tonight, said Lo Chang suddenly. He had been standing aside, and now he came nearer, saluting Good Fortune with a hurried, I wish you good rest, sir. He pointed to the scurrying clouds, which had rolled up from the direction of the wind. They were driving over the mountains, at times hiding the crumbling watchtowers, which crowned the summits. That's bad, said Good Fortune anxiously. But are you sure? Lo Chang speaks the truth, said Christian. Old shepherds are the surest weather prophets, cried Good Fortune. Come on, quick, quick! Good luck to you, whispered Lo Chang, and when you reach White Stone, inquire for Dogalon. Yes, we'll warn him against Greencoat, Christian assured him. Does he speak Chinese? He'll understand you, but you must be very cautious, for it will snow soon. Christian wondered what the snow had to do with the caution they were to observe in their mission. Up till now there had been valleys and hills, gorges, cliffs, and many boulders, but now, all of a sudden, there was nothing but a high tableland over which Good Fortune was able to drive quickly. For a time the old watchtowers punctuated the route. There were some remnants of the little wall, which belonged to the chain of towers. But the little wall had never been an imposing structure like the Great Wall. It was more in the nature of an outwork, which the Ming emperors had built for their soldiers, lest they should be too frightened by the sight of the uninterrupted steppe. They reached Lake Town in 10 minutes. It was not a town at all, and Good Fortune drove at top speed past the few poor houses. No lake was to be seen anywhere. That's funny, said Christian, searching the map diligently with the magnifying glass. No, it's not funny. It's just a name like yours or mine. I'm called Big Tiger, though in reality I'm small, and a tiger looks quite different. What's the name of the next place? Pole Home, announced Christian. Pole Home is just a designation, said Big Tiger loftily. It's sure to be quite a new place, and there'll probably be only one or two houses there, inhabited by the people who looked after the telegraph line. The line is in a bad way all the same, Christian remarked, glancing up at the telegraph poles with their torn, dangling wires. It can't be helped, said Big Tiger. The line is destroyed. Pole Home, which they reached in half an hour, turned out to consist, in fact, of only two houses, but both were in ruins. The surrounding walls were broken, the wells were silted up, and when Good Fortune sounded the horn, no one appeared. Two half-burned trees, which the former inhabitants had planted in a garden outside the enclosure, were visible for a time. Their charred branches stretched helplessly into the evening air. Otherwise, there was nothing, either living or dead, to be seen, nothing but the bare plateau. Good Fortune drove on the grass bank between the road and the telegraph poles. There was less dust this way. The wind had dropped. To the north and west, a brown bank of cloud edged the horizon. It boded ill for the night. The sun was yellow and stood a hand's breadth over the horizon. As it sank into the bank of cloud, as if into a soft bed, Good Fortune honked, And suddenly there were more houses, a town hall, and a gate through which the truck thundered noisily. "Here we are in Chiang Bai," said Big Tiger. A broad street led straight through the town from the south gate to the north one. Even before they reached the north gate, the houses ceased, and there was an immense open space. Good Fortune drove right into the middle of it, stopped with a jolt, and, jumping out, cried, "Now, honorable gentlemen, we're in a great hurry." "So you're aware of that at last," growled Greencoat. He got out, looked at the sky, then at the pale moon, the cloud bank, and the town gate, and shook his head. But Good Fortune refused to be depressed. It seemed, indeed, that the more ill-humored Greencoat grew, the more cheerful Good Fortune became. "Kwee Chan, you hold the funnel, and Big Tiger, hand me the gasoline. Hurry up, young princes." "We hear and obey," Christian said. When they had finished, Good Fortune switched on the headlights. The engine was humming and the horn honking. "Look out," shouted an old watchman. "Those roaring motor cars kill more people than they leave alive."